miss you when I
Welcome back, everyone. For today, Joel Bonco actually returns from the Sarah Palmer episode, and today we're going to discuss Ronette's Angel. But before we dive into it, I'll hand over the mic so he can introduce himself further and also tell us what he's been up to since the Sarah Palmer episode.
Hey, I'm Joel. I'm from the Lost in the Movies website and its various spinoffs on different platforms. The Sarah Palmer episode since then, quite a bit. And also not as much as I thought. So I thought I'd be finishing various Twin Peaks projects. I had way too much on my plate, so I've been simplifying recently. I've ended a number of the public podcasts. I put up what I plan to be my last piece of public film writing and going to focus all my output on Twin Peaks, other than on Patreon, where I will be continuing film coverage. But I just have so many Twin Peaks things to do with the Twin Peaks character series, the Lost in Twin Peaks podcast, and eventually Journey Through Twin Peaks, the video series, that I want to give that my full attention. So that's where I'm at right now. And also, I guess to give a little tease for something that will be going up on Patreon soon, I've been deeply absorbed in the Halloween series for like the first time ever, really, for me. I'd seen the film before. I actually covered it, the first one. I'd covered it on my podcast, but there are like 12 films after that of like wildly varying quality, completely contradictory chronologies. It actually reminds me a lot of Twin Peaks. And I think the reason I liked watching it so much through the highs and the very lows was because of that, because it reminds me of that kind of messy but ambitious and compelling Twin Peaks structure.
I guess to start off with Ronette in particular, before we get to the Angel, it's probably good to talk about what we think of Ronette from what we see in The Secret Diary and Fire Walk With Me, because from what I gathered is that in The Secret Diary, Laura and Ronette meet at, I'm pretty sure it's one of Leo's more wild parties in 1985. I know that Ronette, she does help Laura end up alongside with Leo Johnson and Jacques Renault to get her back in the house after the truckers incident. And after that, it's mostly just like her and Laura kind of doing drugs. They have a falling out when Laura gets sober. And actually, Laura, she mentions how she wishes Ronette and Donna, like, she wishes that they could be friends, like, near the end of the diary. Was there anything that was worth addressing about Ronette's life from that 1985 up until 1989, relating to the Angel?
Yeah, I think in the film, very consciously, if that's the right word for Lynch, but certainly very much at the forefront, and I think the diary plants the seeds for this, there is an effort to set up Donna and Ronette as kind of the two sides of Laura manifested in other people, you know, the quote-unquote good and the bad. And I compared it in a podcast I recorded before to Donna sort of being the angel on her shoulder, Ronette being the devil. Now, that said, I don't think Ronette is like an influence per se on Laura, but I just think that on like a kind of an allegorical level, but also like a psychological level, the way that Laura sees it, she kind of sees in Donna who she thinks she used to be, what she's lost, what she wants to protect in somebody else. And she sees in Ronette what she's become. The fact that they're both brunettes, which, you know, hair color is very important in Lynch films, and that like in the pink room scene, as Donna is sort of losing her consciousness with the drugs, we go into this blurry shot that spins around and reveals Ronette coming out of the haze for the first time in the film. So I think there and in other spots, very much narratively and structurally, which we'll get into a lot because I think it's really pertinent to the Angel, you see this juxtaposition between the two of them as yet another way of visualizing and dramatizing the two sides of Laura and her inability to reconcile them.
I have to say, I completely agree about the what you mentioned about Fire Walk Me, is that Donna is basically the replacement Ronette and vice versa. And there is something that's very important where I think that's like a scene that firmly symbolized it for me. And it was something I picked up on upon reading the Secret Diary. But I guess the next thing I should mention is the behind the scenes aspect of why the Angels were here, because I know that the Angels were not in the script for Fire Walk With Me, and I think it must have been the Twin Peaks UK Fest of 2012. It was Lenny Von Dolan, Katherine Coulson, and Phoebe Augustine was there. But Phoebe Augustine, she talked about how David Lynch and Joanna Rae tracked her down to, you know, when she was like far away from Hollywood. And David Lynch is like, I want you to come back as Renette. And Phoebe's like, no, nothing good happens to Renette. It's always just bad stuff. And then David Lynch is like, well, if I give an angel, she's like, yeah, I'll do that.
So, you might know that I stopped acting quite a while ago. And my husband and I lived in LA, and then we'd run away to Alaska, and that's where we were. And when David tracked me down, or somebody did, Joanna, what's her name? The
Joanna
casting?
Ray.
Joanna Ray. Called somebody who knew I was up there, called up there, found somebody who knew me up there, knew where I was going that day. So here I am at the chiropractor's office in the room where you get your adjustment and stuff, and the receptionist comes in. Phoebe? I said, yes. She said, David Lynch is on the phone for you. I can take it up in the front. So I just went behind her desk, hello? It was David. And we talked for 10 or 15 minutes maybe, because I had sort of a runaway. He just talked me into coming back. And I told him, I said, it's only ever just bad stuff happens to me. It's always so bloody ugly and everything. And he's, okay, how about if I give you an angel? Will you do it if I give you an angel? And so I was saying, oh yeah, okay. Good.
Thus, one of the most important elements of Fire Walk Me was, as far as I can tell, based off of that conversation. Like, was there anything about the behind the scenes aspect about the script or, anything about the angels that was worth addressing?
Yeah, I think that whole process is fascinating to me because even at the time, I don't know exactly when that con I mean, from what you're saying, it sounds like she remembers it as being before the casting process. I've also heard that, well, I know it wasn't in the script, certainly. So I don't know when she was brought in, but like the script, the sort of the final shooting script has no angels in it. So like he was coming up with stuff kind of on the fly, and it was definitely based off conversations with her and Cheryl Lee as well, because Cheryl Lee has told a story several times of like her and Lynch talking about the prop that's in her room where there's an angel on a table. And of course, I think ultimately that relates to a different angel than the specific one we're talking about, but obviously they're all kind of connected. And this idea of like bringing angels into the text, planting the seeds, and like the speech that Laura gives Donna, which again wasn't in the script. Yeah, it's an interesting question. Was Renette in any? Yeah, she would have been. I'm trying to think if she would have been in the Washington part of the shoot, which they did first. And I guess she would be because she's out in the woods and stuff, like waiting for Laura by the car, which I'm pretty sure was shot up in Washington.
Yeah, as far as I know, all this stuff that we see in the final act, barring the Red Room, obviously, the train car, the interior was filmed in LA, but I think almost pretty much everything else was Washington, like when we get to, that part of the movie.
Right, and that's right, because Ray Wise is running them through the woods and all that. So she was there for the Washington stuff. I do get the sense that the real development of the Angels was when they were on the sound stage. Like that was where it started to really take shape as like a specific thing. Yeah, I would love to know the backstory of that picture, like how the picture with the angel ended up on the wall. Because to hear Cheryl Lee tell it, like her and Lynch would have these conversations specifically around the idea that like Laura needed some kind of hope or redemption in the story, and that was the motif they kept coming back to, because they were like looking at what's around them, and it's like, well, there's this picture on the wall. And it almost sounded like the picture was not put there for that purpose, but that it then led to that. So it's kind of interesting.
One thing to mention about the script before we get into like the scene, but before the angel comes in, I was reading through parts of the Fire Walk Me script, and I know that Phoebe Augustine, she was talking about that only bad stuff happens to Renette, and I think that for as intense and upsetting as Fire Walk Me can get, I actually thought the script actually got mean spirited, because in the movie after Leland slash Bob shows up to the cabin, like he screams like maniacally in Laura's face and she's burst into tears. But in the script, like he like if Leland slash Bob is sexually assaulting Renette, like to the horror of Laura, and I'm thinking like that combined with no angel is like
Yeah.
that just veers in the realm of just mean spirited because in the final movie it just feels like. Once again, it is intense and upsetting, but you feel like Lynch loves this character. He loves Laura, but in the script, I was like, this would have been just off-putting for, like, I think everyone, certainly for me.
I think one of the most compelling things about Fire Walk with Me, and I really credit John Thorne with spotlighting this for me, is the idea that Lynch was kind of making it up as he went along to a certain extent. I mean, most of the movie's there in the script, but I think the whole crux of the movie, and arguably of the entire Twin Peaks narrative, even including season three, is what happens at the end of the train car and then followed by the scene of Laura in the Red Room. I mean, what was in the script was basically just a brutal murder scene where she says, no, she just denies him. There's no like character motivation in it. There's no like visual symbolism. There's no kind of texture to it. It's just basically what they described on the series. Like she wouldn't let Bab have her, so he killed her. And then, in the Red Room, she's like sitting on Cooper's lap.
To me, that is just an utterly bizarre way to end that script. I think I said when I was on the Twin Peaks Unwrapped Fire Walk Me panel, I used like I paraphrased some that Jordan Peele said, that when he writes a rough draft, that it's more of just him pouring sand into the box before, in order to create sand castles. And I want to give the benefit of the doubt that that's what this Fire Walk Me script was. But like a lot of the stuff that was cut out or altered, I think it was all for the better. And I think a lot of that stuff is what salvaged it from feeling mean-spirited to something like visceral and sincere for me.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. I think the best way to look at it is like he was creating the raw material of what he would then shape into the end of Fire Walk with Me. The creation of it is very seat of the pants. Like it's interesting to read the script and have it lead not to what it leads to, but then of course the same is true of Mulholland Drive, where it seems like he's crafting this brilliant narrative that's going to conclude in this particular way, but all of the conclusion was came up with years after the other stuff was shot, like in the can. So he's just really good at pulling endings out of something that was created without a particular ending in mind. It's a little more subtle here because most of the stuff is in the movie, but I would argue the key elements are not.
Oh, no, I would agree with that. And I think to move on, and I think this is actually a part that I know that when people analyze the dialogue in this scene, this is what really drives the wedge on what prompts the angel to arrive in the train car. But Ronette says, "Father, if I die now, will you come and see me? Don't look at me. I'm so dirty. I'm not ready. I'm sorry. I'm sorry." I know that John Thorne, when he wrote for certainly for the essential wrapped in plastic, that he said something about how the way that Ronette is begging for forgiveness, that it doesn't ring true for why the angel would come in. What were your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I agree 100%. In fact, maybe he was the one who pointed me in that direction. I don't know because I didn't remember that. But certainly, my conversations with him were like crucial in shaping my view of the angel and what happens, even though I kind of, in some ways, go with a little bit of a different direction than him about exactly what's happening in the train car. But I completely agree because the whole film, I mean, first of all, Laura's issue is not the issue that Cooper and others had, that Leland certainly had. Of failing to recognize the flaws, or that, like, if anything, she goes overboard with recognizing that in herself. So the idea that, like, she was not like self-critical in this way, and therefore Renette would get the angel and Laura wouldn't, like, that to me just doesn't ring true to what the movie has shown us. I also don't think that's really particularly Lynch's creative worldview, like, as expressed in his movies. I think recognizing something in yourself, yes, but like the sort of like self-hating aspect of it just doesn't seem to be what he would think would lead to divine intervention. It's a very sort of fundamentalist Christian kind of view that just kind of that doesn't totally resonate for me with the rest of what he's creating in this film and others.
I guess before I get into my stance on this, I guess, because we were talking about the Christian, almost like biblical aspect of it, is that it's only in this movie and it's in no other facet of Twin Peaks. Like even in like the Secret History, for example, when it shows the I forget which passage in particular, but it shows early on in the Book of Ezekiel and Mark Frost, or I guess we'll say better with Major Briggs, that was to convey like what he thought were UFOs, when in the Bible that's what are like these like heavenly angels truly look like. And for me, I think of like the angels with Fire Walk With Me is that, for example, Cooper, like he has that very like Eastern religion. He has like Lucy reading the Book of Tibet. Again, people invest in the Dalai Lama, other certain principles that Lynch adheres to in real life. But in this movie, because Cooper's like relatively removed, because we got the scenes with him with when he's talking to Albert about who's going to be the next victim. But outside of that, it is predominantly more so in that Christian, like very surface level, because I think of like, Laura, Donna, Ronette, where they live in this small town where, everyone goes to church. And I think that's like the basis of why it makes sense. It kind of rings true to me why the angels would be there. Like, for example, the scene with Laura and Donna, that's a scene where when she's saying that the angels won't help you because they've all gone away. It was actually John Thorne in that same article where he was talking about how everything's overhead to show that the angels have always been there. And I think to tie into what this means pertain or not is that when she says, "Father, if I die now, will you come and see me?" That this is sort of like a begging for forgiveness. And I know that there's this very it becomes subtly self-deprecating as it goes on, like saying, "Don't look at me, I'm so dirty." And I think that those subsequent lines were more so to show just the direness of that scene and just the terror that it was. And I think that for me, I view Ronette as like a very strong center point of like what Twin Peaks is all about. Because I guess to fast forward to how I feel about her, like in the original series, is that I look at her as the forgotten victim, where it's like, she's completely forgotten, especially after Leland's death, strangely enough. She doesn't get the same treatment that I say Laura does, for lack of a better term, because Ronette, for example, she's the one, she crosses the state line, and that's what gets Cooper into Twin Peaks to begin with. And of course, she's like, unconscious for pretty much all the first season. And she's pretty much removed from the murder mystery throughout that time. And then she's completely scrapped after Leland's death and is only brought in to get into the Black Lodge in the series finale. So I think that Ronette is like this character that is forgotten, and I think that it fits thematically with Twin Peaks. So I think that the angel summoning is like a way to show that there is someone watching over her, even if we don't see it in this time frame throughout the original series.
Yeah, there's a lot to say about that. I mean, first of all, just to talk for a moment about Renette on the series and why she's interesting and what Lynch picks up with in this film, I think there's definitely a class element to it as well, which is interesting in Twin Peaks and Lynch work in general, because I feel like, particularly in his early films, there is a kind of, people have commented before that there's kind of this streak of like, for someone so avant-garde, where you have certain stereotypes of what their politics are or whatever, there's something sort of conservative about those early films. Like, there's a very much a sense of like upholding clean middle class kind of, certainly in Blue Velvet, I think. Eraserhead is, it's kind of hard to see anything in that particular movie is like clean and whatever. But certainly in Blue Velvet, I almost think of Renette as a little bit of a tangent or something from Dorothy, where you have this sort of other side of the tracks of the community that people almost kind of expect it to be more corrupted. And the shock is in when that corruption crosses over into, or vice versa, the middle class kind of presence crosses over into it, which is what you get with Jeffrey in that film, where he kind of goes to the wrong side, don't go to Lincoln Street or whatever. And he goes there and he's like, it's apartments rather than suburban homes. She's like a cabaret singer. She's embroiled in all this criminal activity and stuff. And, with Renette, I think she's seen as the person that it would be, just like with Teresa, the person that it would be expected something like this would happen to. And the whole conceit of Twin Peaks is, isn't it crazy that this happened to Laura Palmer, the prom queen, the lawyer's daughter? And so, yeah, I think that plays into the angel aspect as well in an interesting way, which we'll kind of get to when we talk about why does Renette get the angel? What is Laura's role in that whole scene where she's looking at her and everything like that? Yeah, the Renette is the one who is kind of, I think that plays into the whole idea of like the two sides, again, the manifestations of her different sides, their class sides, sorry, they're class coded as well, where Donna is like, the doctor's daughter in this nice home, and Renette is like the logger's daughter who's kind of out. Her parents aren't really watching over her, and she's the one that Laura kind of follows into the woods, so to speak. So yeah, there's that whole aspect of it. I just wanted to, I know this is episode's not specifically about Renette, it's about her angel, but obviously that kind of relates to it as well.
I think that when she says the first part of "Will you come and see me?" That's like the indication of like asking for forgiveness. And this angel comes, and for me, I look at where it's like I think that Ronette is the one that summoned the angel. And like I said, the stuff when she says "Don't look at me onward," that's all stuff that just like to show how dire the situation is for her. But I think of like with Laura's case, because she makes it very clear to Donna that she thinks the angels have all gone away. And she has that picture, and the night that she's killed, she sees that angel disappear. And I can only imagine just how devastating that is for her, that she like has to know that she's going to die and that something just like irreversibly terrible is going to happen that night. And I look at that like when Ronette's angel appears, that there's something reaffirming to Laura in that moment, in like the worst possible moment of her life before she faces the worst fate of her life. And I even kind of wonder, because I should mention is that once this angel comes, that's when Ronette's hands that were bounded are now unbounded, right when Mike shows up. And I think that, she's the one that opens the train car. Had the angel not shown up, that, she wouldn't have been able to open that car. And also, even maybe if like Mike or Ronette did, but I would wonder if Laura would have taken the ring had it not been for that angel's presence.
No, and that's basically the crux of my whole argument, which I guess I'll kind of put my cards on the table. The way that I read that whole scene is that both literally and metaphorically, it's basically Laura as the angel for Renette, that she can't be the angel for herself, but in seeing her own suffering in this other person and having compassion rather than kind of hostility, at least for this moment, that is what brings the angel into the train car. And that, yes, the angel unbinds her hands. That allows her to open the door. That allows the ring to come in, and the ring is what seals the deal that Bob can't have her. So there's a lot of strands coming together. And, again, I've talked about this, and I have a podcast episode on it and a video essay that kind of deals with this. So I don't want to repeat myself too much, but I think it works brilliantly on both a like a visual level and a thematic level. I think really like the climax, there's sort of a cascade of images at the very end of this scene that all happen very quickly that I just described. But really the climax is the appearance of the angel itself, and everything after is kind of downstream from that. And I think Laura is the reason that the angel come. I don't think it's Renette's prayer. I think it's Laura's, or at least it's not Renette's prayer directly. Without knowing it, she's almost kind of praying to Laura, because her friend gazing across, like the way it's intercut, it's clear she's looking at Renette. And she's not, by the way, in that moment, looking at her own reflection, which is what Bob wants her to look at, what Leland wants her to look at, the picture of herself transforming into Bob. Because I believe, and again, these are all sort of, these are things the film allows. I wouldn't necessarily say Lynch intends this. I would allow the possibility that he does, but I don't think it's dependent, the validity of it is dependent on that, because I don't know if he thinks these things out in that way, or if he's more about collecting something that feels intuitively right and letting it play out and not really figuring it out to what degree. It's his creative process is purposefully quite ambiguous. So with that disclaimer out of the way I read the scene is that the reason they're in the train car with Renette is that Leland slash Bob, and I think they each have their own kind of motivations that intertwine with one another, they want Laura to kill Renette. And that will make her, that would be the thing, the act, which would kind of ritualistically seal her to the darkness, to evil. It would be the point of no return, just as with Leland, certainly by the time he kills Teresa, but I think way before that, with the abuse of Laura, maybe things he did in his youth that we don't know about, he crossed that point. And I think, therefore, her manifesting the angel in the train car, not intentionally, not like she has some psychic ability she knows about that she's gonna invoke, just through the sheer like psychic power of her compassionate gaze and her concern for her friend, I think that is a perfect reversal of what was probably intended to happen in the train car. So for me, that is the reading I have of Renette's angel.
I would say that in terms of what you were saying about the ritualistic killing, I know that me and Cheryl Lee Ladder, when we did our Ronette episode, the dedicated Ronette Pulaski episode, we actually came to that same conclusion.
Yeah, that was a great episode, by the way. Good. Highly recommend a listen.
Oh, thank you. But I guess one thing I'm thinking of is that, since you're mentioned that Laura is like this like prominent aspect to it, how much of like, for example, when Margaret says Laura is the one, whether it's the Log Lady intros or Part 10, or even the Golden Orb, are any of those factors that kind of reaffirm that for you? Or is this just something just within the confines of Fire Walk With Me?
I think they're echoes of it for me. It's yes, I think it sort of ripples across the whole Twin Peaks narrative, but this is the moment. Like this is the key moment in the entire, if I can do the math, 48 hours, 50 hours or whatever of Twin Peaks that are out there. This is like the crucial key point. This is like, the mystery box Mulholland Drive, this moment. I think this is the moment where you see the whole kind of significance of Laura's arc, and also makes a good contrast with Cooper in a number of different aspects, and why his narrative kind of continues and can't get to a similar point of resolution, because he's he has trouble sort of crossing the threshold, and I use that word purposefully, that Laura is able to in this specific scene, in this specific moment. So I think for me, if that's not the lens that I view it through, it becomes much less resonant for me. It's no longer like the linchpin for me. And I think it's significant that there are two angels. The one we see later looks like the one in Laura's portrait on the wall. Like it has this, she has the same curly blonde hair. And that I think of as Laura's angel. That's the one, I think you could maybe argue Cooper is the one who manifests that there, possibly. I don't know. But in the train car, this angel, it's for Renette, but I think it comes from Laura. I think it's significant that it doesn't look like the angel in the picture. It looks like Laura herself. And actually, if I'm going to trace this back to probably the first kind of seeds of this idea, it's in an essay by Christy Desmet in the Full of Secrets book, called The Canonization of Laura Palmer. And she says something which is factually incorrect. I don't know if she meant it on a less literal level or if she was just mistaken, but it kind of started the wheels spinning, I think, in this direction, which she says, although Laura seems to be abandoned by her spiritual guide, in reality, she herself is transformed into the guardian angel. Moments before her murder, Laura, dressed appropriately in white robes, appears to Renette Pulaski, guiding Renette out of the trailer to eventual safety. Now, of course, it isn't Cheryl Lee. It's not Laura in there. So if that's what she meant literally, she's wrong about that. But that suggestion of that being what it sort of meant, I think that was where that might be where the idea first began to kind of percolate of like, how is this angel connected not just to Renette, but to Laura? And I think when you look at the visual language and the editing of this sequence, which is so brilliant in a way, how Lynch takes all of like every single element, it seems like a case. If you sort of experience it viscerally the first time, it seems like such a chaotic sequence, but it's like every element has like a crystalline kind of purpose to it. And so you see this cross-cutting between the shot of Laura and the shot of Renette, and then the light on Renette, and it's reflected on Laura and her kind of amazement at the appearance of the angel. And it's clear that this is the moment of escape from the trajectory that Leland Bob has set for her. That the bringing of Renette into the train car, which was supposed to be the thing that sealed the deal of losing her soul, essentially, is actually the thing that allows her to transcend. Now, that does mean that she will be killed here, but it's a much more poetic and powerful, I think, version of the idea of what they were already trying to convey on the show, which was that she was too strong. She said no to Bob, but this gives us a specific way she does it, which has so many layers and levels and facets to it that are so rich and resonate throughout the film. From her rescuing Donna in the roadhouse, it's kind of an echo of that. And I've already talked about how Renette and Donna are kind of, opposite sides of Laura in a way of her own self-hatred and the way this character kind of stands in for that. It's also, in a weird way, a moment of self-love that she has this compassion for Renette, which is also something that Bob doesn't want her to have. And so it's just, to me, it's an absolutely perfect encapsulation. It's like the vortex at the center of the Twin Peaks whirlpool for me.
And I think before we get into the Angel's role post-fire walk with me, I think I'd be remiss to not talk about the scene itself and just like how well executed it is, because I think of like not just the first time, but even like when I was doing my notes to rewatch that scene, just like the contrast of how dire everything feels, like ranging from Phoebe Augustine and certainly Cheryl Lee's facial expressions, where it looks like just genuine terror. Angelo Badalamenti's music building up is also just like this major component. But what I love is that as dire as everything feels, the moment that Angel emerges, there's just this serene silence where there's just like this, like literally every time I watch it, it's like this like almost hair-raising thing for me. And this might actually be a bit of a strange take, but I think there's something just as maybe even more visceral about that Angel in the train car because of the contrast of that scene. But I just wanted to put that out there and see if you had any feelings of how you felt when you watched that scene for the first time. And how you feel about it now.
Well, I completely agree. I will say, though, it took me a while to get used to the scene. The first time I saw the movie, I wrote a review that night that was deeply moved, but also kind of ambivalent. I couldn't quite wrap my hands around the movie. I was not appreciating the supernatural element of it. I felt it was a distraction from the psychodrama, and eventually kind of had to reconcile those aspects over the years with repeat viewings. But I didn't, when I did the review, a lot of it is sort of, I wouldn't say a plot summary because I'm stopping at each point and kind of talking about the significance of what I'm seeing, but certainly it follows the narrative and then it stops around the scene where Leland comes into her bedroom and I discuss that and I discuss my sort of trouble with the film, what was so strong about it, what my questions were, and I just stopped there. I never talk about her death scene at all. And as time went on and I revisited the film, I kind of moved along closer to that point. It was probably the third or fourth time I wrote about it that I even mentioned the scene at all. And I was at that point saying, well, maybe the angel is sort of a. And I, at that point, I think I was just talking about the angel in the red room, not even in the train car. The angel is kind of like a metatextual element, like Lynch kind of reaching out to his character in a way. Maybe that's what it is. And it really wasn't until the conversation with John as I was starting work on my Journey Through Twin Peaks videos that I came to my current kind of reading of the film. So in terms of like the impression it creates, it's hard for me to recover that because a lot of my impression of Twin Peaks is filtered through having a record of my thoughts and being able to go back and look at that again and build on that. And somehow I think my impression was just of kind of despair, and I don't know that I was able to see the hope embedded within that scene until I'd gone through the movie a few times. And I think that's a common experience. I think a lot of people, it's funny again, I was talking about Halloween at the beginning of this. I've been kind of fascinated with the Rob Zombie films, which the second one, a lot of people have, or at least a few people have compared to Fire Walk with Me. And I think in that film, there is less, I think Rob Zombie is a less optimistic filmmaker in a way than David Lynch. And so you kind of get a sort of, without giving too much away, some of the same dramatic trajectories of Fire Walk With Me without the sense that maybe there is a greater transcendent, what is it, the unified field. Yeah. I don't think Rob Zombie has a unified field, but that's a whole other discussion. But I think that's how many people see Fire Walk With Me the first time, as a film basically devoid of hope that is really about paying witness to Laura's suffering and tragedy. And it is absolutely that. But I've come to see another thread through it as well.
Yeah, I suppose that like how one stumbles across Fire Walk With Me or the order they watch it, that's going to be a huge like point of why people feel moved by certain scenes. And I think I might mention it when I was on your show, but for me, I actually watched the original series having no idea that Fire Walk With Me was even a thing. Like I kind of heard about it and I typed on IMDb. It's like, wait, there's a prequel movie? And I kind of had this facetiousness. I'm like, yeah, well, spoiler alert, Laura gets killed. But you know, it was great to see that David Lynch is back on board. Because I could tell even before looking online, I could just tell there was like a compromise with the studio when we get to like that back half of season two. But so I was just happy to have a movie where it just felt like it was going back to its roots. But I mean, of course, I've said it multiple times in previous Laura Palmer episodes, I was very deeply moved by Cheryl Lee's performance. But moreover, to pertain to the Angel, that was one of the many factors, and one of the, I think, one of the more prominent factors for me of David Lynch giving like give me what I didn't know I wanted from Twin Peaks, and why that scene and also Laura's angel scene at the end like were so moving for me.
Yeah, no, and I don't even know if he knew it's what he wanted because of, look at the script and then what he eventually shot. It's something he discovered in the process of collaboration with the actresses and watching the kind of feeling of the film evolve as it became a reality as it was shot.
Yeah, no, I agree. I guess now that we're veering away from Fire Walk With Me, I brought it up a little bit, but I was thinking about the Angels' influence on Ronette throughout the original series. Now, I look at it as that, that those first two seasons take place tentatively over the course of a month or so. And of course, Ronette is like the forgotten victim. And then we're just kind of looking at a ground view of what's like a broader picture for her. But do you have any thoughts of like what the Angels' influence throughout the original series for Ronette? Obviously not on screen, but anything off screen for you?
In the so you're saying, like, if we think of it as a narrative that takes place after Fire Walk With Me, even though we know, of course, there was no angel at the time. Well, actually, it's funny that the hope, especially for Renette in Fire Walk With Me, only comes from a familiarity with the series, because you could easily see that movie and think she's dead at the end. She's on the ground, she's not moving. Leland kind of kicks her over and moves along with Laura, and we never see her get up and walk away. It's really the knowledge of the series that allows us to know, the angel's intervention wasn't just to get the ring in the car, it also saved Renette's life. And even at the end of the series, the fact that Lynch, again, on his own, not with the script supporting him, brought Renette in to show that she was still traumatized, obviously, but she was out of the hospital, she'd return to her life. Because every time we see her on the show, she's like sweaty and initially she's like all bloody and everything. So seeing her come back, she got like a short haircut, she's got a sweater on, like she's moved on in some sense to the extent she ever could. And it's like, so that gives us a sense of closure with her, while showing us she's still so haunted by what happened that night, which, of course, at that point in the series, we think of this as taking place over all these years when it was shot, but it's like a month later. So it's really, in terms of Renette herself, it's the original series that gives us any closure we have on her character and kind of lets us know that the angel meant something for her. I guess. If you want to read like a narratively, you could say the angel, the guardian angel, continues to look out for her because she's maybe the only person to survive an attack from Bob. I mean, does anybody else like, certainly none of the female characters I can think of. Does he? I'm trying to think if there are scenes where he kind of, as Mr., with Mr. C or on his own or whatever.
I think in terms of like having an encounter with Bob, she is the only one who survives. Yeah, certainly, certainly throughout the original series.
Twice. She survives twice.
And yeah, I guess one thing that's worth mentioning, because we were talking about her in the season two finale, I think that there's one thing that's worth addressing, because this kind of eases into what I think of the angel in the return, is that in the season two finale, Ronette is taken to the sheriff station to confirm the scorched engine oil smell that's in the mason jar, just so they can know to go to Glastonbury Grove and go to the Black Lodge. But the thing is that Cooper, I think this is emblematic of Cooper, how he doesn't understand the ramifications of what he's doing, where it's like he has Ronette relive this trauma. And the thing is that he goes to the Black Lodge, obviously he gets stuck there. But then when we get to part 17, it's another factor of he doesn't understand that there's a larger picture at work when he tries to rescue Laura. Again, trying to look at from ground level in context with Laura's fate, because I think people forget how brutal that fate truly is, because it's not one specific stab. It's like a series of small stabs that she eventually bleeds out. And even in Fire Walk With Me, there's that POV shot of the plastic going over the camera to indicate that she's probably still alive and still bleeding out. And that's like understandably a horrifying death. But the thing is that Cooper, of all people, should understand that there's a broader view of this, especially with how Laura was guiding him in the season two finale and part two of the return. I know this is starting to become about Cooper, but what I'm trying to get at is that when you get to part three, I personally view the American girl is indeed Ronette. And I think this version of Ronette is like almost like an alternate reality of where Laura went missing after he tried to rescue her, thus denying Ronette her angel. And I should mention is that as bleak as this sounds, I still maintain that the final scene in all of Twin Peaks for me is when Laura gets her angel. And for me, that makes me think that if Laura gets her angel, that would mean that Runette, one way or another, gets her angel as well. I know that was a lot to bring up, but I guess to try to condense it, did you think that there was anything about the angel or the American girl or anything of these natures when we get to the return?
Well, as we said before you recorded, I tend to be sort of conservative in saying when a character who has is credited differently is the same character just because they're played by the same actor. So I tend to categorize American Girl as a different character than Renette, but obviously it's not insignificant casting. There's some sort of connection being established there. I love that idea. I don't know that I ever, although I kind of seem to remember you mentioning that at some point, but I don't know that I've ever really thought about that this the idea is Renette didn't get her angel, and so this now manifests as American Girl. I'd have to think through more the implications of that. How does it relate to the mother figure banging at the door and this and that, and I also think, yeah, if we're buying that as like a full-on alternate universe where, as Mark Frost kind of wants us to think of it in Final Dossier, which I think is debatable. Like, there's a lot of different ways you can look at it. But if you go with that reading, then I think he would have showed up at the cabin and probably killed Renette to cover his tracks. Because in that version, Laura goes missing and Leland kills himself a year later. So, yeah, I guess the assumption would be she probably dies, probably not in the train car. But then I don't know. I mean, I think it's something that honestly just was probably overlooked in the dossier, unless I'm forgetting something.
Yeah, I remember someone on a Reddit AMA after the final dossier came out, they actually did ask Mark Frost about like why would Leo and Jacques take her to the train car. And I'll be honest, I thought it was a pretty unsatisfactory answer on Mark Frost's part, where I think he chalked it up to Leo and Jacques being kind of buffoons, but that didn't quite answer the question. So that part of the final dossier, I have like a pretty big asterisk and conditional statements. But I think to come back to Runette potentially being the American girl in part three, I always mention that Runette is like the forgotten victim in Twin Peaks. And I think the fact that she doesn't have a name kind of adds to that for me. And I think the other thing that's worth mentioning is that before Cooper, when he comes in, Runette replaces Nido. And the thing is that that's someone else that, granted, it wasn't Cooper directly, but it was Mr. C that did assault Diane and is what subsequently like led to Nido being potentially where she what is effectively. So I think that, I look at like this room as like kind of just stuff that Cooper, it's stuff that he never meant to do intentionally, but because he never understood the larger picture, it led to ramifications for Laura, Diane, and Runette. And again, like I have, beyond that, I don't think I have much to substantiate, but it's just something that rings true to me.
Yeah, no, that's a great observation. I think if Renette, I think in a way, what Renette is to Laura, Diane is to Cooper, where it's another person that kind of requires their compassion and sympathy, and Laura is able to provide it in a way that Cooper is not, Laura to Renette and Cooper to Diane. So that's definitely a compelling aspect to it as well. And then I guess too, if we're talking about like what happened, I just thought of this for the first time, but maybe there's some significance to the fact that she's not named Renette, that her name is American Girl. So one thing I have discussed before is the idea, and again, there's so many ideas and have percolated over the years. I don't know if this was a conclusion I drew or if somebody else pointed me to this, so credit where due into the ether. But the R that's under Laura's fingernail, yes, it spells Robert with the T that's under Teresa's. I wonder though if it was intended for Renette, because again, if they were going to kill Renette in the train car, the R would have gone under her fingernail, just like the T went under Teresa's. So it's like Laura kind of almost took the bullet there for Renette. And I wonder if if in this version where he does kill Renette, maybe they find her body and Tammy just never brings it up because it's not relevant or whatever. Again, we're reading stuff into the work that's not there, but she would probably end up with the R under her fingernail just from Leland slash Bob. And it's like her name taken away in a sense. And now she's just American Girl. That part I'd never thought of before until you just said that. The idea that maybe, and that seems like a Lynchian thing to do, the idea that you like make somebody's where name into text and remove it and reinsert it back, and somehow they lose their name. There's a weird kind of Lynchian logic to it, I think.
I actually really like that observation. Because I think that also adds the whole idea of Ronnot being the forgotten victim. I guess the only question I do have for it is that I'm thinking of the dinner table scene with Leland and Laura, where he says there's dirt right under this finger now. With this theory in mind, do you think that was him just kind of setting off that he would put a letter under a finger now, or do you think that the letter was actually under there to begin with? Or I guess does this scene factor into it in some sort of way?
It's definitely a threat and a callback. It's a callback to the series, and within the chronology, it's a threat to her that she wouldn't understand, but means something to him. All these elements they came up with in the pilot, I wouldn't even say almost certainly. Certainly were just cool images that Lynch had in mind. What if there's, a piece of paper that says "Fire walk with me" on a dirt mound, and what if there's like a letter under the fingernail? I would absolutely bet the house on him not having an idea where all of that would lead. But eventually, he finds ways to kind of follow through on them that give them tie them in with other ideas. Like there's just a wonderful dream logic to his work, where you find connections between things that were not originally connected. And the idea that the letters under the fingernail relate in some way to a sense of dirtiness and corruption that his weirdly puritanical and also abusive personality would see, I think, is one of those connections there. But I think whether or not you believe Renette was the intended victim, I think it seems pretty well established by this point that he didn't bring Laura there to necessarily kill her. It was a space of confrontation and an attempt to kind of pull her over the line, but the killing was really a byproduct of the failure to do that, I think.
I do agree with you on the whole, the ritualistic killing would be a thing that would set off the Bob possession. But I think that we covered everything about Ronette's Angel, which, to be fair, for some that's like 50 plus minutes, like for a character with 5 seconds of screen time, I think that's actually a pretty tremendous, because I think of every character I've done so far, I've never done with one with so little screen time, but for me permeates a lot of the mythos of Twin Peaks.
No, absolutely. And I mean, I'm a broken record on this, but talking about the way that Fire Walk With Me so perfectly, the end of that film so perfectly encapsulates and kind of crystallizes everything that the series is about. It again, and now it feels like the world at the end of Part 18 is a world where the angels have all gone away. Like there's that sense to it, and it does make me feel again like, even though I think the trail's gone dead, basically, in terms of Unrecorded Night and all of that, Wisteria, it seems like that whatever was happening with that has died on the vine, if it even had anything to do with Twin Peaks. I still feel that like call of like, okay, there's something else that we need now, because the story felt complete, and if there's this extra material, like it needs its own Fire Walk With Me and its own path, I think, at this point, to show us how Cooper got to the Red Room. And again, to sort of relate to the theme of this episode for me, I do feel like if it's other people's compassion that evokes and materializes into angels, then I would say it's him looking at her in the chair that brings her the angel in that scene. And I would love to know what gets him to that point where he has that kind of understanding and power. And I don't think it's anything that happens before or in season three. I think it would be something that happens beyond that, whatever that means.
But I would say that I do have to credit Phoebe Augustine for having that initial rejection to return as Renette, because I think that because she was resistant to it, that we would not have gotten this scene and this thing that would make Fire Walk Me this like as deeply moving as it does. Because maybe it wouldn't have been in the final script, but I think that the angel showing up in the train car and Laura getting an angel far supersedes Laura sitting at Cooper's lap in the Black Lodge, and then it cuts to credits. But yeah, I think I said everything on my end. Was there anything, final thoughts you want to say before we wrap up on today's episode?
No, I mean, I'm very interested to hear your eventual episode on Laura's Angel, because I feel like there's a lot to build on there, and I think also just the whole concept of, like, we didn't even really have a chance to get into the whole kind of concept of angels in general and their place in media and all of that. So I feel like we've got the ball rolling here, and there's like a part two to this conversation that I can't wait to hear.
for a broad stroke about that, because I was going through angelology, leaning into the research of this episode. And I think the reason why I didn't bring it up too much on my end, at least, is because I was thinking of like whether it's angels in more of the Christian belief or angels in a more, for lack of a better term, a new age sort of way. It feels like Lynch kind of had his own way of going about it because, as we were mentioned about Ezekiel, as it was presented in The Secret History, is that those show angels that there's something a little more terrifying inherently of their appearance, hence why in the Bible says, like, don't be afraid. But then also, angels are kind of almost like their own thing as well, if you go into the realm of like whether it's like on a new agey realm. And again, I don't mean that derogatory. I'm just saying that there's different contrast between the two. And it just seems like Lynch kind of picked this almost like picture perfect version of it because I think he picked perfect casting for both of those actresses for the angel, where they just like feel like they came right out of like, the art of that time, or like art of like, of the previous, like, before Lauren Ronette's respective lifetimes. Yeah, so admittedly, it's a bit of a broad stroke on my part, but that's admittedly why I didn't bring up too much on my end. But honestly, if you want to bring up more, I'm happy to bring, put it in the episode one way or another.
No, I mean, I would just say the 90s, I think, was this particularly angel obsessed time. I mean, you had the show Touched by an Angel, I remember. I feel like there was a lot of like sort of books and narratives published about angels. There was just like they were sort of having a moment in the pop culture, it feels like, that Lynch was either tapping into. I mean, a lot of that stuff came later in the decade, so maybe he was anticipating it. I don't know. But it is interesting in that context too. And of course, Neon Genesis Evangelion fans will have their own relationship to the idea of angels and how that relates to protagonists going through their traumas. But I'll leave it for those who've seen that to think about.
And since we've reached the end of the episode, was there anything in particular you wanted to plug in terms of what you're working on for shows or anything you're putting online?
No, although again, it's funny. I did mention that I want to do something for my Patreon about on Halloween, and I was just thinking of the fact that apparently there's a scene in the first one where Michael Myers is unmasked. It's like one of the only times in the entire franchise that you see his face or even glimpse it in shadow. And I guess John Carpenter's direction for like the casting of that, because it's not the person who was under the mask for most of the film, the actor. He said he wanted someone who looked like an angel. So make of that what you will.
But yeah, no, I want to thank you for coming on because I remember having a great time on the Sarah Palmer episode. I was thrilled to have you return.
Yeah, and I'm looking forward to our next one, which I won't spoil yet what that's going to be, but I think you'll be surprised, listeners. Together. Darnette, Darnette. Well, there you go. I just created a portmanteau.